I'm wondering how to start. Good evening. Hello. I'm very curious about you. Curious how you're doing. Just then I was curious about what your relationship was to the silence here in this room. And probably that changes, but yeah. I was noticing a particular quality of silence here today at different times and just now. Wondering if any of you noticed that. Being foreign, my fantasy is that you all know about this beautiful silence that comes out of your landscape. But the thing about what's familiar is we don't notice, right? You know, and a meditation retreat, we do, more or less, as you've probably figured out by now, the same thing over and over again. We do develop the instructions, of course, but the forms, the behaviors, the sitting, the walking, the standing, we ritualize that in a certain way because attention tends to lose its interest when things become familiar. And so in a contemplative practice, we do similar things over and over again to train and see the habit of attention that will go away. Oh, it's sitting again. Breath, body, Finland, been here before. You know. I have the privilege of the beginner's eyes here in this landscape, in this feeling what's different about being here. I haven't gone to sleep on you yet. But we can go to sleep on ourselves, right? Do you know that when I say that, we go to sleep on ourselves, our attention can lose its crispness, its aliveness, its interest. Because it's like, oh yeah, same old me. Yeah, okay. So let's, and over the days, as you know, if you've practiced before, that attention will be able to become more in relationship with what isn't so obvious, with what doesn't call the loudest, with what sparks our interest and speaks to us of more possibility. So, I think tonight I would like to offer some reflections about what we've been endeavoring to do together today. How did it go? Not always easy, is it, a first day of a retreat? And if it was easy for you, I want to include you too. With our frame of the body, the whole body, and a little bit of room around the body, and learning how to find out how to bring attention, to saturate this whole field with attention. But we're not, most of us probably, I don't know you, but I'm guessing, and making certain assumptions by being modern or postmodern people like me, being Western and being both the inheritors, for better and for worse, of the Western heritage of beautiful ideas and strange ideas. That it's not always easy for us to immerse in the body. Body as an arena for attention, to really be awake, presence in this area, is not always valued. It's not always what we've trained at. We've, many of us, trained in attending to other domains more at home perhaps in the thinking faculty, which will be included in this practice and is included, but is not God in this story, is not the domain, is not home base. So first task, it really is to recognize and value this as a domain. And I found this, I read a book recently, it's actually a neuroscience book, which isn't my normal thing that I read, but sort of more up-to-date research talking about, you know, that the neuroscientists have moved beyond thinking that everything is centered here. And they come now to the sort of embodied mind, and they have more interesting views, in my opinion. There's more I would like to see, but interesting views. And the author was talking about the Western heritage of not valuing the body as an arena of intelligence, as an arena of, and in our case, as an arena for awakening. And he says this, still today, long after Descartes left us with a theory of mind that was so influential, right? So Descartes is the one who we gets accused of or attributed with or applauded for, and all of those probably, an important stage in that philosophical enterprise of that split, in a sense, between the mind and the body. So long after Descartes left us with a theory of mind so influential, clever people, I'm including you in this, clever people can look on their bodies merely as an irritatingly fallible form of transport, a way of getting their minds to a meeting, the maintenance of which, terrible now. This is terrible. I'm complaining about having a body that gets to the place where you need glasses. I'm doing the same thing. I could try it differently, couldn't I? It's like, God love me. I can't see what I've written down. Clever people can look on their bodies. That's much better. Clever people can look on their bodies merely as an irritatingly fallible form of transport, a way of getting their minds to a meeting, the maintenance of which takes up valuable time and distracts from much more important business of having opinions, engaging arguments, and making decisions. I would include in that, for many of us as meditators come and actually might have the same view, that it's a sort of irritatingly fallible form of transport at best. It's kind of in the way of my progress because it hurts, because it keeps calling, because I can't pay attention to it. If it wasn't for my body, my practice would be a whole lot better. Sounds like some of you recognize that thought. I'll tell you a secret. It's not a secret. It was told to me when it was felt very personal. I think that's why I think it's a secret. Some time ago, I had a really difficult time, really, really difficult crisis. And with my body, I was really at pains with my body, not physically, but in relationship with my body, in a very caught up view of body. And really struggling, and at times not, you know, I didn't think I was going to kill myself, but I could sense that there was something I really, really wanted out of here somehow, on some level. And my teacher at the time, he said, do you know, it's 7 to 9 times more difficult to be awakened without a body. And I looked at him, he's just a bloke from England. I was like, huh? How do you know that? Do you know that? Where did you get that from? But I took it on. He said it very kindly with a lot of love in his eyes. It's 7 to 9 times. I don't know what his evidence base was. Sounds like he'd done some PhD in... 7 to 9 times more difficult to get enlightened without a body. So you can play with his cosmology if you like, but it touched me. It's like, oh yeah. You know, and think about it. However difficult our mind and our heart can be, You know, if there wasn't, the body slows it all down. When we start to have a moment of mindfulness, probably the first time any one of you here had a moment of mindfulness of foot touching the ground. Oh, for most people it's a kind of relief when not only is our foot touching the ground, but we're awake that it's, and knowing that it's touching the ground. The body can mediate the kind of spin, the quickness of the thinking function and the, what would you call the emotional function? Not the quickness, it's faster than the body's pace. It's a little bit more insistent unless we're in pain with the body. But our body mediates a lot of this inner activity. So please, let's together, as much as we can, this week come to heal that split that many of us are still, not many of us, I think culturally we're all carrying this division, this devaluing of body, or this fascination with body because our view of body has gotten hurt. So, yeah, where are my glasses? So a little bit about the training of attention. So this morning I made the distinction between involuntary attention, attention that just goes wherever it's used to going, just by habit, not by wise intention. The discrimination of that with voluntary attention, which is what a contemplative trains. So we are the contemplatives, we're interested to train attention that is voluntary, meaning we have some say in where it goes, how it goes, etc. Well, we would like to have some say. It takes a while, all right? We would like to have some say, guided by wise intention. In a way, we could say that involuntary attention is guided by a principle of seeking pleasure and moving away from pain, just involuntarily. It's a kind of knee-jerk response. You all know that, right? We just kind of want to move away, shrink to the, from the pain. What tends to be in between the pleasure and the pain tends to be overlooked. If it's not something I can eat, taste, chew, mate with, or it's going to threaten me, often there's whole arenas of our life where our attention just doesn't attend. So a contemplative is interested in bringing a voluntary attention to immerse and fill and pervade this body. What's good from a evolutionary perspective, you know, this seeking the pleasure, moving away from pain and ignoring the in-between pieces, arguably, and we can have a discussion about this, it's made us, say tentatively, a successful species in some many ways, right? But what is good in that regard is a disaster for contentment, for happiness, for awakening. So we're training a different muscle than the knee-jerk muscle, which passes for freedom in a conventional sense. I just go where I want to go. I just have what I want to have. Right? So we're doing something quite radical in the sense that we're turning around a tendency that will be one of our tendencies. We're developing another muscle here. So we give ourselves a task in meditation, and we've given a number today within that bigger frame. So the broader frame of the whole body and filling that whole body with bright attention. And within that frame, we give tasks, and we have said things like, sense your body. How does that go? It's tricky, isn't it? Because for many of us, our tendency is not to sense our body. And certainly for myself, an instruction like that for years left me a bit baffled, frustrated, perplexed, thinking I couldn't do it. Maybe everyone else can sense their bodies. I can sense it for a minute and then my attention pings away somewhere else. I feel my weight for a moment and then ping, off it goes somewhere else. And we can be plotting our escape, getting into a tangle of can't do it, everyone else can. Maybe I'm really just the only failure Niroda's ever had. You're not. In a way, what we want to understand is that's the case for some of us. It can be hard. We don't just sense our bodies. And I just want to say a little word about that. To different degrees, I think each of us will be more or less able to make sense of that instruction at different times and have that direct experience and linger there. And I want to include you if you're someone who for whom that's not just available right away. And I'm going to give an example of one of my students for whom we could say, and she's happy for me to share this example, for whom the causes and conditions in her life made that extremely untenable as an option in practice. To come close to her body was too scary for various reasons. There was too much panic arose in her heart when she attempted to come close. And I won't go into all the causes and conditions, but you may recognize at times yourself, you may not be in that extreme, but you may recognize some of gradations around that, where either we just ping away right away, or if we try and linger with body as body, it's too problematic. There's more healing called for. And she had really tried a lot of meditation retreats, and she had got to a place where she was too overwhelmed by her inner processes as she was starting to handle some difficulties that were these difficulties that made it hard to be in her body were emerging, surfacing. And she, in desperation, one time, she lives near me, and she went up to Dartmoor, which is the national park area. And she was actually an urban person. She wasn't from the countryside, probably urban for many generations, and didn't have an affinity necessarily with outdoors and with animals. It's also part of the alienation, right, for some of us. Maybe less here. I don't know. And she went up to Dartmoor, and in desperation, she just stood there like she'd reached the end of all other possibilities for as far as she could see. And we have wild ponies up there, one of the few wild-ish places in England. And one of a white mare came up to her. And I now believe her because she's taken me up there since, and I've met this herd. And I'm an urban person also for many generations, so it was not my easy channel. And the white mare did this thing horses do, kind of nudged her with the fabulous. Say, head. I think when I tried to tell this story before, I called it a nose, but it's not a nose, it's a head. Fabulous head. And nudged this person in towards the black stallion, who I brought a photograph of. And the black stallion nudged her toward the herd. It might have been the other way around, I can't remember which one came first, but it was the white mare and the black stallion, nudged her towards the herd. And she didn't know anything at that stage. Subsequently, she studied this in great detail and trained with people who were very knowledgeable about these things. And she said that the herd kind of, it looked to her like the herd noticed her. Not out of fear, because she had been introduced by one of the herd. And she sat down, and she suddenly got the sense, and it didn't make sense to her mind, but she got the sense that somehow she was part of this group, this tribe, this community. And she said, with regard to mindfulness of body, she said at that point she noticed her body breathed out. She said, at that point, I noticed the contact of my bum on the cold grass. She said, at that point, I noticed my limbs start to relax and my body start to fill with a little bit more presence. For her, and I think, you know, you can adapt this for yourself, maybe you know this for yourself, not necessarily with horses, but conceiving of my body as just this thing here, and then if I shut my eyes and try and do meditation to feel my body, it can be a very small domain. It can be a very fraught domain. And what she opened to in that case was when she was reminded that she was part of something, of a bigger domain. And in this case, a bigger domain that was not hostile and was benign. Then her body could start to take its seat. Then her body started to relax. That's when it started to make sense, all the instructions that she'd heard and didn't like. So I offer you her story a little bit. If you're struggling at times with working too hard, have any of you tried that? You have the task and then you start working really hard. Right, I've got to pay attention to my body and my breath and fill it with mindfulness. And right, if you're on that end of the over-efforting, stop. The way we attend conditions the result. So if I'm attending like this, trying to get concentrated or trying to tighten and narrow my gaze really hard because I couldn't do it with their instructions, it sounds too amorphous, too undistinct. Let me just focus on something firm. Stop. Remind yourself of a context that allows your body to breathe out. In the story of the Buddha, on the night of his awakening, when he was assailed by Mara, which we might translate as a crazy mind, right? He reached down with, the story goes, with his right hand. He reached down and touched the earth. And as I do that right now, I just invite you to do it, actually. If you're on a chair, you can improvise, use the wall or the side. I really invite you to not make it abstract, not make it just a nice thing that chap did in North India. He reached down and touched the earth. And I've done this in meditation retreats at times when my mind was a bit bonkers. And wait and linger till your fingers, till your hand gets it. It's like plugging in to a bigger circuit board. If your electric system is just this small, it's a little fraught. I've reached down and touched the floor of meditation halls at times, sometimes out of desperation, sometimes out of love. Sometimes because I'm curious to see what happens when I do. And linger and wait. Wait till your body gets it. Wait till your breath elongates and changes. Wait till you go, okay, I can stay till next Sunday. If any of you have been plotting escape. Okay. No. Okay, I'm not committing. Just now? Yeah, okay, I'll stay for now. Yeah. Please do. Using the tangible sense, using our hands, one of the legacies of the perils and pitfalls and privileges of the Western mind's heritage is the privileging of abstraction, the privileging of kinds of knowledge that are away from the body, that are more, you know, the logic, reason, etc., etc. Beautiful. Beautiful, potentially, but without a body, they can be disastrous of what they weave for us, individually and collectively. That sentence was going somewhere, wasn't it? Who knows where it was going? Where's it gone? Don't remember. Ah, yes. Yeah. You know, today when we did the exercise using the hands, both to touch and to come around the periphery of the body, using our hands to support our meditation, I wonder if the thought occurred to anyone, oh, that's like what kids have to do when they can't do it properly. You know, you have to kind of act it out, or use your hands, or do an action. You know, when you sing a song, you have to do an action to go with it. I wonder, maybe it didn't, but did it cross anyone's mind of, oh, it would be better when I don't have to do that, and I can be completely still? No? Good. No, nobody's. Okay, well, just in case you're not owning up. Really, really do use your hands at times. Reach down to touch the earth. You know, when small children, you know, for example, with mathematics, in the beginning, a child needs, typically, unless they're maybe a genius to start with, I don't know, typically will need, when learning how to count, they'll need to have concrete things there. And they say, what's two sweets plus three sweets? Four. Five. Right, and then when you get to however old you were, if you're very clever, I don't know, 6, 8, 10, somewhere where you don't need the sweets anymore. And you go, yes, got it. I'm advanced, I'm making the cultural heights. Don't need to do it like that anymore. And of course there are beautiful gifts that can come from those kinds of knowing. But they will not get us to awakening on their own. So also at times, please bring your hand and let it come to any part of your body that would call for that kind of touch. Or even any part of your body that's not calling for that touch because you're a bit embarrassed by that, or think you shouldn't need that, or someone's going to see me, or I should be able to work with it without touch, then please touch. Please come and cherish this body with your hand at times tonight when you're taking off your clothes. Maybe some of you know this, and I invite you to do it now. Please bring whichever hand is dominant for you to your chest and your heart center and leave it there. Let the impression leave it there. And leave it there long enough for your body to speak its language. And in the case of my student, that was when she noticed her breath go, oh. Right? Stay via all the parts that go, might say, oh, this is silly, or this isn't meditation, or this looks flaky and new-aged, or know, past all the doubts or the cynicism or the, and wait and linger. To learn how to attend to body as body, we need to learn how to linger with the body. If we're relating to the body in the way that we do to thought and want the results quickly like that, thought are chiseled, they're quick, they declare themselves, they're often clear. They often have a conviction about them, whether we think we're terrible or we think we're great. The body does not yield to our attention in the same way. As we begin to know body as body, the body reveals themselves, herself, himself, in ways that are less declarative, less sharp, less chiseled, more diffuse, more vague at first, less clear how it all fits together, less something that I can grasp and go, oh yeah, that's it. Partakes of a wider field, a wider domain. So if we want to learn how to deepen in samatha, samatha, this abiding here and now, this abiding of the whole body, through the body, as the body, we need to learn humbly the kinds of attention that we need to meet a body. So I want to give you, or remind you, if you know, of some traditional Dharma language, which I find really helpful here. Two factors of attention, and do leave your hand there as long as you like. You know, if you want the evidence for it, we've now even got the scientific evidence for what happens if you leave your hand there long enough. It's good for you, eventually, even if you're a cynic. But you can know that for yourself through contemplation of what happens. So two factors that will be present in a gathered and collected attention. for samatha, pretty much, all, for most of the samatha that we're going to be engaged with, these two factors are going to be present. And in Pali, these are called vitaka and vichara. Both are necessary. Vitaka is the factor of attention that points and gives a frame to what we've decided to pay attention to. Okay? It's the concept. It's the idea. So, vitaka today is, can you sense your body? Body is the vitaka. Body is my arena. Okay, there's the vitaka. My attention has agreed. I have agreement with myself that this is my arena. And I can point, like the finger pointing, this, of all the things you could pay attention to in the world right now, I've agreed to pay attention to this one. That's vitaka. But it needs to be married with its partner, vichara. And vichara is, once we've got the frame, we're clear about what we're attending to. Without vichara, which is the lingering, the staying, the fondling, the staying, the feeling out the territory, the touching, the sensing. Can I stay just a little bit longer to the end of that out-breath? All the way to the end. Can I linger? Can I stay just a little bit more? Without vichara, what happens? We decide to pay attention to something, we sense it for a second, and then we're gone. Right? So learning how to linger. Learning how to stay. What can support this is asking questions. And we've offered between us a number of questions today. A question can bring with it the vitaka and the vichara. So when one of us says to you, can you sense your body? There's a question. Can you sense your body? Okay, body. They said, pay attention to my body. Okay. What are you sensing right now? What lets you know you have a body right now? Let's do this. So, yeah, you can sit any posture you like. Let this question not only be cognitive, it is cognitive and that's important, but let it become a question that points you to the territory and then stay and wait for the response of your body. Wait for the response coming in sensations or atmospheres. So the question right now is, beyond the visual, what lets you know you have a body right now? Notice that the mind will go, oh, I did this earlier, I already know. Or, oh, this is boring. Can we do something more juicy? How's this going to help? Mind might do those kinds of things, or I can't do it. But how do you know you have a body right now? Can you switch to that channel? If you're trying to get there on the thought channel, you will feel homeless for a long time. What lets me know I have a body right now? And then I linger. Oh, okay. So there's a little bit of discursive thought there. Oh, I can sense my weight. Wow, okay, what's that feel like? Oh, wow, it's a kind of whole diffuse area right now, like that's like an imprint of my backside on the cushion. Wow, it's not very clear, but it's kind of warm. Ah, wow, it actually feels really good to let my attention rest there. Can I linger? Can I stay with that goodness? Can you let your breath at times emanate from that spot that you have given your attention to? So at times, while the overarching frame may be the whole body and the space within the body and just around the body, at times you will lightly wish and want to and sense the rightness of staying with a place in your body. For example, the backside touching the ground with the breath. Right now, with the weight, sense the distribution of your weight, of your arms. Is one hanging heavier than the other? There's a question. To which the answer isn't just yes or no. The question is to help us linger. Oh, let me sense that. Yeah, actually, wow. When I sense it, it's like, I can't tell which one is heavier, but can sense my right elbow, it's like it feels like really chiseled and sharp, and my whole left arm and the sense of it feels much more softer. And can I sense that directly? Can I let the concept and the idea and the question take me in, take me deeper into a world that when we learn how to pay attention with respect and care, will reveal untold treasures and dhammas. I think the Buddha said, in this fathom-long body, do you have fathoms? It's the old measurement, at least in Old English, which is more, I think it's a measure for measuring depth of water. And I fathom is a more or less the height of a man, average, I don't know, it's about 6 foot or something. In this fathom-long body, the whole of the Dhamma will be revealed. When we learn to linger and stay, it's the beginning of collecting attention. And as attention collects, we recognize that it's wholesome. Doesn't mean that we're avoiding pain, doesn't mean that there is no pain arising, doesn't mean there aren't issues to look at. It means we're learning how to train and tune to an oasis of abiding. And no matter how much pain is arising for you, there will be places in your body that are profoundly okay. Profoundly okay. And while our attention might have a knee-jerk response to fix and narrow and tighten around what's not okay, that wasn't okay how that person looked at me earlier, and this bit's not okay. Can we train and turn to the channel where it is? It's not avoidance. It's before we can possibly attend to our hang-ups. We must cultivate enough, just enough, abiding. Not a perfect abiding, not the best abiding, but restoring our attention to the body. We can begin the journey of samatha. Samatha, the collectedness, which goes from soothing and settling the baby of our mind, right? In psychological language, we might call it that capacity to regulate our nervous system. Right? Like that student did. She sat down on the ground, open to that image of the horses, and her nervous system went, okay. Soothing the nervous system. Settling the baby. And it's not just the baby in us, and the babies in us need care, absolutely, but everything that's jumping up and down for attention. Soothing, that's not squashing it, it's not saying it's not real, it's not pretending it's not there, it's saying, okay, where can I come to in the body? Where can I attend and how can I attend? Maybe a little bit more out-breath. Ah, yes. Can I linger? That's good. Yeah, but how's that going to help? I've got all these issues I have to sort out. It's all right, my love. We'll do that in a few days. Can I come back? Just the out-breath. Oh, actually, that feels really good. Yeah, but this terrible... It's okay, my love. We will come to you. Sit beside me for a moment. Let's attend to the out-breath. Samatha begins, for most of us modern people, with restoring our attention to the body. To settling, soothing the nervous system. And it opens, if we stay with that, to more and more deeper well-being, nourishment, uplift, right through to deep absorptions of the jhanas. So please give attention to this, wherever, and it's not like, oh, I must be the one who's at the bottom end of the samatha scale here. No, at times, different of us are at different places on that. There is a development, absolutely, but things also, as we practice, things can arise that need our attention that we didn't know and will call us again to deepen that root. In learning how to settle the baby, to soothe the nervous system. And as humble practitioners, we will be willing, wherever we are on that spectrum. How long is the Dharma talk supposed to be? I didn't look. Is it 45 minutes?
Whatever is appropriate.
I think it's first night that's probably enough. Is it 45 it's written down for? Yes. Was it quarter past? Yeah, let's. I won't just like stop quite so abruptly. It's one of my patterns that I'm learning how to. I'm trying to be a little bit more elegant with. Right, okay, that's enough. Off we go. Yeah, let's breathe together. You don't have to close your eyes. I'll see if there's any closing pieces. So please consider tonight the quality of attention with which you touch yourself. And even if we're not feeling kindly to ourselves, we can cultivate that by deliberately touching ourselves in kind ways and waiting. And our heart and mind will catch up with that good intention. So it's not faking it. It's not actually, I really, really have a hard time, and some of us do, with attending with our body. It's being skillful, okay? I know I have a legacy, let's say, if we do, of either being a little bit stuck in my head or actually a little bit fragmented. It's been really hard for whatever traumas we may have known. Then out of skill and out of care, bring a hand. Let that hand touch you in ways that are kind. And wait. Our heart and our mind will catch up. And not only that, but our attention will pool and gather. Maybe, yes, maybe via the fear, or maybe via the self-disinclination or the self-hatred. Maybe via some of those hard things. But it's possible. It's really possible. Sometimes I imagine where I have used my hands kindly to tend another when I haven't necessarily been able to tend that way fully to myself. And that not necessarily out of self-hate, but just because we can overlook ourselves. And if you haven't, and I imagine many of you will have done such gestures, but if you haven't, dream into the possibility of them. If you have been parents, mothers, fathers, aunties, the way that you may have tended to the flesh of your newborn. The way that you would watch that one breathe and attend so closely, you didn't have to think of being mindful, attending so closely to that breath because you wondered how it got there and was it going to keep breathing if you stopped looking, and because it's a miracle. What would it be to attend to your breath as if it was your first. Whether or not you were greeted that way in this world, you can greet yourself now that way in this world. Not knowing when will be our last one. If you have been one, as I have had, the kindest touch I ever gave to my mother in her age 91, where her skin would so easily break down as it becomes very can become very papery at that time, and on her legs, the skin would keep breaking down, and when she would bang it, it would turn into ulcerated skin. Happens a lot for old people. And so they need dressing and caring for that skin, and one repairs and then another one starts to break down. And then she would need these stockings that would hold the blood pressure. You know, those tight stockings to make sure you have enough, the blood pressure is right. And to get those tight stockings over these sore legs, needed such care, such care. Whether you've had the good fortune ever to be in love with another, and in the moments when you weren't grasping or confused, when there is that belovedness of the other one whose body strikes you as a gift, a divine gift, what would it be to gaze upon yourself with those eyes? It's not too late. And we can't, you know, it's not that we should be always seeing ourselves in that way. But we can play. We can be creative. And we can at least feel our body and our hearts yearning to be seen in ways that restore and heal personal, cultural divides with body, with matter, with earth, with land. So this is a noble task for our sanity, for our love, for our deepening. For tremendous possibilities. Please keep practicing. Thank you. So let's sit together for a moment.